Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Robert Hennick. I represent Daniel Hansen on this appeal. Mr. Hansen was convicted in Wisconsin State Court on one count of fleeing an officer and two counts of obstructing an officer. The officer whose intangible rights to be obeyed and for cooperation with regard to each of those counts, and the officer who was allegedly endangered by the fleeing was Officer Klinkhammer. The issues before this court, given the briefs as they've kind of narrowed down the real issues, kind of focus on the substantive questions, number one, of whether the state Supreme Court erred when it concluded that corroborating character evidence of Officer Klinkhammer to the effect that he was confrontational, aggressive, and hot-tempered complied with Hansen's right to present a defense. That's number one. Number two, whether if the state Supreme Court erred, that error was so contrary to or such an unreasonable application of controlling Supreme Court precedent that we are able to provide federal habeas relief.
Okay, could we try to narrow this down real quickly?
Sure.
ADEPA permits a court, as you said, to issue a writ of habeas corpus only if the state court's determination of the petitioner's claim was contrary to or an unreasonable application. Regarding contrary to, how can it be contrary to federal law when the federal law is essentially the same? It looks like what the state of Wisconsin did is took the federal rules of evidence, put a 9-0 in front of each section, and then called it the Wisconsin Code of Evidence.
Okay, number one, we cannot and do not allege that the state's Supreme Court's application of its evidence rules is a violation of federal law. That is not something we can raise under Estelle v. McGuire. What is the problem is that the federal standard, the federal constitutional standard, requires that while state rulemakers have broad discretion in excluding evidence in criminal cases under the rules, it still has to be such that it is not a mechanistically applied approach that undermines the purposes of justice, or in other words, that it does not deprive the defendant of a weighty interest, number one, and number two, while being arbitrary or disproportionate to the purposes being served.
So are we left with unreasonable application rather than contrary to?
Actually, in this case, it is both, because it is the federal constitutional standard that the state Supreme Court applied both unreasonably and actually never even applied it at all.
Well, what Supreme Court opinion has invalidated 404A2B?
No Supreme Court decision has, and as a matter of fact, we are not trying to invalidate that particular rule. What we are saying, consistent with the Supreme Court decisions in, for instance, Rock v. Arkansas and Chambers v. Illinois, is that you can have a perfectly legitimate evidence rule that is applied in a particular case to undermine the defendant's rights, in this case the right to present a defense, because it is either arbitrarily applied, mechanistically applied, and is disproportionate to the interest to be served by that particular rule. Now, the rule, of course, in this case, the state evidence rule, and also it applies in federal evidence law, is that generally propensity evidence is excluded for various reasons. However, both state of Wisconsin and the federal judiciary, the federal evidence rules, recognize an exception to that, which is an exception where there is a victim of the crime, and the particular character of that victim, a character trait, is important to the defense of the case. Under those exceptions, the defendant is entitled to bring in that character trait.
Do you think that provision in the rule of evidence is constitutionally required?
I do not believe it is constitutionally required, no. The problem with it here is not that the provision is constitutionally required, but that once the state or the federal, but in this case the state, makes that exception under Rock and those decisions saying that it has to be that an application of that can't be arbitrary or disproportionate to the goals, Once you make that exception, you have to apply that rationally and non-arbitrarily or non-discriminatorily. In this particular case, what our argument is that the state Supreme Court had every right to define victim for purposes of the state evidence rules however it wants to define them. Even though we believe that it was irrational in this case, they can define it any way they want to, and we cannot challenge that on a federal habeas petition. What we can do, and what we are doing, is alleging that once the state has decided that victims, that the propensity evidence of victims is important and should be allowed, that to apply that mechanistically in a case where there is someone who clearly is a victim under a more common sense approach and exclude evidence in our situation while allowing it in a situation where the defendant slugged the cop, but not allow it in a situation where the police officer was still denied rights that he was entitled to under the law, allegedly, but doing it by leaving and taking a much less violent approach to it by the defendant, that it simply does not make sense. It is irrational to say that the person who assaults a police officer should have more rights than the person who deprives the officer of intangible rights and does not, you know, actually harm the officer. Now, under the federal standard, as required by the Supreme Court, you have to balance. This court recognized in Sussman v. Jenkins, you have to balance the defendant's interest, in this case, to the corroborating effect of this character evidence on his defenses, against whatever legitimate state interest is asserted for the distinction that is being made, in this case, between victims of assault or defendants charged with assaulting someone and defendants charged, in this case, with violating intangible rights of someone. And I would submit that throughout the state court proceedings, throughout the briefing in the district court, throughout the briefing in this court, no one has ever suggested any legitimate or any interest that the state has in saying that a defendant charged with assaulting an officer has a right to bring in character evidence, but a defendant charged with depriving an officer of other intangible rights does not have that right. And that's where we get into
aren't we dealing with two different situations? Assault is much different from fleeing. I mean, doesn't the fact that we're dealing with two different acts, other than the fact that it involved a police officer, provide some basis to apply them differently?
The question that I would have is why the defendant who is charged with taking the more serious, the more violent action against the officer or anyone should be given more rights than the defendant who merely deprives the officer of intangible rights, the intangible right to be obeyed and to be cooperated with. And those two, yes, they are different, but what rational basis can there be to say that the one who chooses not to respond violently should have fewer rights to raise his defense of self-defense, to raise his defense that he believed that the officer was acting irrationally and unlawfully, than the person who actually physically assaults the person?
Could we real quick jump to 403? The Wisconsin Supreme Court said, therefore, the circuit court properly exercised its discretion when an excluded evidence of Klinkhammer's character, when it was talking about that 403 issue. How can you say that that's not a holding?
Okay, it's not a holding because, number one, the court specifically said it wasn't a holding. It said it may be excludable. It didn't say that it would be excludable. The court specifically recognized that, number one, the circuit court, had not excluded it on that ground. It had not been argued in the Supreme Court for exclusion on that ground, I don't believe. I don't recall for certain. But it just said may be excluded. 403 in the federal court, 90403 in the state court, is an issue of discretion for the circuit court. And unless you are going to say that under every circumstance, if this was not excluded, it would be an abuse of discretion, then that has to be a decision made by the circuit court. And if we look, I'm sorry,
you may complete your thought.
Thank you. And if you look at the Supreme Court's actual rationale for saying that this may be excludable under 90403, the court said, number one, that this is repetitive evidence. It's not repetitive. That's under the federal habeas rules, an unreasonable factual finding, and that's an unreasonable factual finding. There is no basis whatsoever in the record to say that that is repetitive of anything except the defendant's own statements. It's corroboration. It's not cumulative. And it's, for the reasons stated in our briefs, I would ask that the court overrule the reverse the district court's decision and grant the federal habeas relief. Thank you.
Mr. Hennick. Mr. Gansner.
May it please the court. Try as he might, and Mr. Hennick makes an ingenious argument, he cannot escape the fact, I believe, that the petitioner in this case sought to have federal habeas corpus relief granted on the basis of a ruling by the Wisconsin Supreme Court that was based upon a matter upon which the Wisconsin Supreme Court has the controlling voice. What the meaning of victim is in the Wisconsin evidence rule at issue in this case, and whether, as the court very clearly stated, in this case they were being asked for the first occasion to determine whether a police officer, a traffic officer engaged in the enforcement of traffic laws, who after stopping, after some difficulty, a suspected traffic offender, is then faced with an uncooperative traffic offender who flees, thus causing the officer to pursue a significant number of other officers to be brought to bear in stopping him, whether that officer is a victim of the crime of fleeing the officer. The Wisconsin Supreme Court said, and this was their sole authority and responsibility for interpreting Wisconsin law, answering this question for the first time, this question of first impression, that the answer was no, that the reliance that was being made by Mr. Hansen in making that argument was largely on the basis, almost exclusively on the basis, of lower court decisions in Wisconsin that had suggested, not held, but suggested that a police officer in a traffic situation might be the victim for restitution purposes. And the Wisconsin Supreme Court said the question of whether or not, for evidentiary purposes, introducing what has been referred to as corroborating character evidence, whether the police officer is a victim so that character evidence of a pertinent, what is arguably a pertinent character trait of his, can be admitted, that is an entirely different question than whether or not, under a separate statute in Wisconsin, the police officer might be a victim for restitution purposes. The clear distinction between them, which I think is important for us not to lose, is it is a useful contrast. The victim in the restitution case, as the court made clear, is someone who has actually suffered some tangible loss, most often property or injury, resulting in medical treatment and lost wages and costs. In the case of an individual police officer who is engaged in the enforcement of the traffic laws, who is faced with an uncooperative driver who flees, as occurred in this case, unquestionably, the officer is not a victim in the sense of having been injured by the defendant. As the circuit court in its I think very astute ruling at the time said, this is basically a victimless crime. Or, to put it another way, the real victim is society. The police officer who is engaged in enforcing traffic laws does not become a victim of the effort of a person he's attempting to arrest to evade
detection and arrest and being taken into custody.
Let me ask you this, and this is something that Mr. Hennick touched on, and that is, doesn't the Supreme Court's ruling incentivize violence to a police officer? Because a defendant is rewarding for doing violence to a police officer, striking a police officer, rather than fleeing, because if he strikes a police officer, he can present more evidence.
This is one of those arguments that without genuine metrics to test is almost impossible to answer. Are we incentivizing? If we were running a social science experiment and could put the rule into effect and then wait 10 years and see how many cases there were in which a police officer was assaulted, we might have some basis for saying so. We don't have that kind of evidence, but most important, number one, this was a call for the Wisconsin Supreme Court to make in the interpretation of its own statute. This is an argument that presumably was made. I believe it was made in this case in the Wisconsin Supreme Court. The Wisconsin Supreme Court rejected it, but did not do so arbitrarily.
Well, but there are we agree there are limits.
Sure.
To what the Supreme Court could do.
Oh, sure. But I think the point that Mr. Hennick has been making here is that there was an arbitrary or mechanistic rejection by the Wisconsin Supreme Court of the meaning of victim in this case, and I don't think it's arbitrary or mechanistic or irrational at all to say that a police officer who is engaged in the enforcement of the law, who is deprived of his or deprived of, I take it, what Mr. Hennick was saying, the intangible right to make an arrest a little more easily, becomes the victim of that crime when the person flees. What Mr. Hennick is arguing for is a recognition that victimhood is to be bestowed upon an officer who loses some intangible, almost ethereal right to make an easier arrest. I don't think that's what the Wisconsin Supreme Court was clearly not prepared to accept that notion, and it is not irrational or arbitrary or mechanistic, in my view, to have done so.
Could we talk about 403 for just a minute?
Yes.
The Supreme Court said that it was likely the propensity evidence could have been excluded under 403. Is that sufficient to make a holding?
I believe it is. It certainly is the Wisconsin Supreme Court saying, certainly in a very cursory fashion, it recognized the alternative basis that the circuit court could easily have concluded, although it didn't. It ruled on the basis of 904.04. It could have concluded that was another ruling it might have made. Now, I think the Wisconsin Supreme Court is entitled to say that's another basis upon which it could have been excluded. And I think that's a perfectly reasonable conclusion.
Was that issue ever raised in the district court at all?
I don't believe it was principally relied. No, it was not argued to any real measure in this case as an alternative basis. I think what it does suggest, however, is that the right result was reached in this case, even if that particular ground or alternative ground for decision was not specifically argued or emphasized. I think this is a case where the Wisconsin Supreme Court got it right, and this is not a case in which a defendant is able to show that which he must show to obtain federal habeas relief, that the criminal justice system in the state of Wisconsin operated so unreasonably incorrectly that an injustice was done here that deserves a remedy only through habeas corpus. Under the ADPA, those are the standards, and that is not what happened in this case. And for these reasons, we ask that the court affirm the district.
Thank you, Mr. Ganser. Mr. Hennick, your time has expired, but you may have a minute.
I think the major confusion here is that the respondent seems to believe that we are attacking the state Supreme Court's decision interpreting state evidence law. We are not attacking that. For whatever reason, that is the law of the state of Wisconsin. What we are arguing is that under the federal rules applied by the Supreme Court and required by the Supreme Court, the additional step where the state Supreme Court said We have excluded this under state evidence rules, and therefore the Constitution is fully satisfied. That is wrong. That is not the legal standard. That is contrary to the controlling legal standards. That is an unreasonable application of the controlling legal standards. And when you actually apply the controlling legal standards, the evidence was admissible, and it should have been admitted. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Hennick. Thank you, Ms. Kanza. The case is taken under advisement.